On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, we will preview a big fight in the heavyweight division. Anthony Joshua is back. He's taking on Jermaine Franklin. We got a big fight in the lightweight division just got announced. Devin Haney versus Vasily Lomachenko. And unfortunately, a fight that fell out that we have to talk about as well. April is here. Let's go. What is up, everybody? Welcome in to another episode of Inside Boxing Live. It is the best podcast in the entire universe, world, and the metaverse. I am Dan Canobio. He is the former WBO 140-pound champion, Christopher Algieri, who beat the living hell out of one of the owners of John Boy Media. Go check it out on YouTube. Chris, how are you feeling after your big win over Jake?
I told him he needed to pay me more, and you know, he didn't really listen to me, so I got my pound of flesh, put it that way.
Did that fight, and what I'm talking about is the John Boy Media Boxing Combine, which is live right now on the JM Entertainment YouTube page. You're going to want to check that out. Three episodes of high-profile boxing between our creators and Mr. Christopher Algieri. Chris, did that fight, like, did it spawn something? Did you feel something in the ring where I got to get back into that ring?
No, I mean, I never left. It was just, it didn't feel any different than anything else. It's like, you know, sparring sessions feel like you get into a certain mode, and it's just, that's just the way you are. I don't know if that's ever going to leave me per se, but I mean, I fell right back into line as soon as we got in there.
Dude, a couple of those shots you threw, like we're going through the edit, and like obviously you're like a 15, 20 year vet. Like some of the body shots, and then like you had your hand covering the right side. And I was like, damn, it's just much. It's like riding a bike for you.
Oh yeah, no technique. So I've always been a really technical guy, anyway. But like you said, I've been a pro for 20 years. Like I turned professional in kickboxing at 19 years old. I have 49 pro fights. I've spent more time fighting than not. So for me, it, you know, just goes right back to it. I was happy he wore the body shield because I could actually punch him. And
some of them are very loud. Like a couple of those body shots sounded like straight up gunshots.
Yeah, because those things, they work really well. Like coaches wear them, they absorb the power really, really well. It's you don't feel a whole lot through those. Like, I mean, you feel a little bit, but I was glad he wore that because I could really rip those shots. You get that sound.
I'm reading some of the comments on the YouTube video. Personally, I think Paxton could have kicked his ass. A lot of people believe Paxton was snubbed, and she should have been fighting you.
I mean, if they know about the under the table stuff that happened, then yeah, she did get rubbed out of the final because it was all about the money, like I said, just like boxing.
This was incredible. Wish Jake hadn't worn the bulletproof vest. Loving all the content. Jake is like Kevin James from Here Comes the Boom. Chris should have stopped him. Where's the best moment? The Jake Paul one. Jake's punches causing Jake himself to fly backwards was fairly telling of how this would go. The true Italian stallion, Jake Storielli. Jake went in the ring as a John boy, and he exited a John man. I love that.
Wow.
Jake,
solid line.
Jake fought a pro quicker than Jake Paul did. Boom.
Ooh.
Mic
shots
drop.
Fired.
Mic drop. So, yeah.
Shots fired.
Yeah, so go check it out over on the JM Entertainment YouTube page, the John Boy Media Boxing Combine. That was a blast. Shout out to our producer of this show, Ronnie Jerez, who did an outstanding editing job. I mean, the first, like,
kid's a superstar.
The first absolute 2 minutes superstar of the fight episode was, like, cinematic. And, you know, he's deep in the weeds doing blitzball edits, and he had time to do that for us. So hope everyone enjoyed it. We're going to do a lot more fun stuff out in the field boxing-wise. So,
yeah,
Chris.
I hope you guys enjoyed watching it as much as we did doing it.
That was a blast.
We had a blast from moment one to the end. It was great.
Yeah, it was so fun. I hope everyone enjoyed it or is still enjoying it right now. Let's get into the boxing news. We are now entering April. We have a big month planned. Yes, some fights are falling out, most notably Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. And now we hear that Virgil Ortiz and Amanda Stanionis, that fight is postponed yet again. We'll get more into Ortiz's ailment and how serious it is and how troubling it is for him. But just April at a glance, we got Joshua Franklin this weekend, which you'll be on the call of, and we'll have several videos coming out about that. You got Robesi Ramirez taking on Isaac Dogbe over on ESPN. That's in the featherweight division. Love that fight. Bam Rodriguez returns this month. Shakur Stevenson returns this month, fighting Yoshino over in Newark. On that card, you'll have Jared Anderson taking on George Arias. George Arias is a New York guy. I've called a lot of his fights on the Broadway boxing circuit. Sturdy guy. We'll see if Anderson can take him out like he did in his last fight. Sebastian Fundora fights this month against Brian Mendoza at 154. The crown jewel of this month, the fight that I love, Joe Joyce versus Zelahai Zhang. That's going to be such a shootout, April 16th, 15th, or one of those days. It's going to be awesome.
It's the unstoppable force versus the immovable object. That is a perfect way to explain that fight between Zhang. Zhang can really punch. He's a big lefty. He's got a great straight left hand. And Joyce is the juggernaut. There's no better, more descriptive name for anyone in boxing today than Joe Joyce as the juggernaut. Because that's exactly what he is. He goes forward. He gets hit more than he hits you. And he just overwhelms you and beats you with volume. I mean, I love this fight.
Joe Joyce was at the fight this past weekend. And he was in Las Vegas. And so was Wilder. Wilder was there, too. I'm talking about Plant Benavidez.
Ooh, I like that fight, too.
That's the fight. I mean, obviously, I don't think we'll ever get that. I just think there's too much, like, in the way of it. Like, I feel like Wilder has maybe three fights left, and they're going to be, like, Ngannou and maybe a Joshua this summer. But that is the ultimate. Yeah, I know. But that is the ultimate. Like, I want to see if Wilder, who has the best punch in the heavyweight division, and Joyce, who has the best chin in the heavyweight division, like, how many punches can Joyce eat against Wilder? They had a photo op, too, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, I got to see that fight. But that is April 15th weekend. And the following weekend, obviously, this is the real crown jewel. It's Gervonta Davis, Ryan Garcia, April 22nd. We will be there in Las Vegas delivering a ton of content, so keep it locked for that one. That's the big one. So there's April at a glance. Pretty good month. Obviously, we're not getting Usyk Fury. We're not getting Ortiz Stanionis, which was coming on the same day, which would have been an awesome fight day. You know, you get the undisputed heavyweight title match in the afternoon here in the East Coast, and then at night you'd get a welterweight fight featuring two of the best up-and-coming welterweights, but it's boxing. We can't get those things. Sometimes fights fall out.
Yeah, I mean, we even said it on air a couple of shows ago. The Fury Usyk happening this close just was impossible. I mean, it was just not enough time for a fight of that magnitude to get put together. They're still working on the deal, so I mean, no, there was no way that fight was happening in the spring. I think it makes more sense if we see it maybe in the fall. If we do see it, I don't know. I like this fight. I like the chances of it happening because of how much money is involved and how important the fight is. But, you know, this is a punch in the gut.
There's a lot of theories out there as to why it's not happening. Some that – should we get into some of them? Like Fury not training, or Fury, like, getting back to some of his demons, and then – or Fury just pricing himself out or doesn't think he's going to win, or too greedy, or the fact that the Saudis, they thought they were getting this amount of money from the Saudis, and they weren't able to put together a plan, so then they had to pivot to Wembley. I honestly don't care why it's not happening. It's just not happening, and that's really an insult to fans.
I was just going to say, I'm sure there's a million and one different reasons for why this fight happening, and the truth is probably some other one, but whatever it is what it is. But it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, we can talk until we're blue in the face about why it's not happening, but at the end of the day, it just sucks that it's not. But listen, boxing is alive and well right now. We have plenty of good things to talk about.
Thank you.
Things that are actually happening. So
amen, Chris. Amen.
Let's do that. Let's do that.
Can I say that in church? Amen. Preach it. Preach it, Chris. Chris, baseball season is here, my friend. I'm wearing my Yankee hat. Opening day is here. Yankees are going to win the World Series this year. They're going to beat the Mets in 5 games. That's my prediction. America's pastime. It's back. Step up to the plate this season. And this season opener with the DraftKings Sportsbook app. It's one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps. You know that. Right now, new customers can place $5 pregame moneyline bet and get $150 in bonus bets if their team wins. Talk about hitting it out of the park, my friend. Plus, everyone can get in on the Major League action with no sweat bet from DraftKings. Opt in, and if your first bet doesn't win, don't sweat it. You'll get bonus bet and bet back up to $10. So go ahead and download the DraftKings Sportsbook app app right now and sign up with code IBL. New customers can bet just $5 on any pregame money line and get $150 in bonus bets if their team wins. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code IBL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Chris, how many home runs will Aaron Judge hit this year?
All of the home runs, but I want to go. We need to go to a game, dude. We need to do a Hot Boys boxing.
JM Hot Boys, Yankees me, you, trip. And Ronnie sitting behind home plate.
Let's do it. That'll make some fun content.
No,
too.
We'll definitely do that. Judge, I think his over under for home runs is 45. He hit 62 last year, which broke the AL record. Will he hit more than 45 or less than 45?
More.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. There you go. You can make that bet right now at DraftKings. So enjoy that.
More.
So that's what we do. Someone said that, like, you're an evangelist for boxing. That's pretty much what I am. I go around and I want to talk about the good things, highlight the good things that are happening. And the boxing schedule is just fine without a Fury and Usyk. Yeah, it would have been awesome to have it. But, like, you know, the beat goes on. And obviously, a big fight that was just announced. Let's talk about this. Devin Haney is taking on Vasily Lomachenko May 20th, MGM Grand, Las Vegas. All the belts, the lightweight Super Bowl, you got best first best, a very technical fight, but you got a guy in Devin Haney who has all the belts. He's one of the youngest champions in the sport. Then you got the grizzled old veteran in Vasily Lomachenko, who has every accolade in the book besides one. He's never been undisputed. He's a three-division world champion, but has never had all four of the belts in one division. He's tried numerous times, came up short against Teofimo Lopez, had to go back to the drawing board, but now he's back taking on Devin Haney. This, I feel like, will be a very technical fight, but I think it's going to be a really good one May 20th.
Very important fight that needs to happen. And for a couple of reasons. One, it's just, you know, the landscape of the lightweight division. Lightweight division is one of the deepest in boxing today. And we have an undisputed champion, and a lot of people like to talk trash about him, about his ability to, that, you know, the belts that he's gotten. He got his first belt in the mail. We're talking about Devin Haney now.
I was going to say, which one are you talking about? Because both guys, I feel like there's question marks around them.
Well, I mean, Lomachenko's question marks are a little different. It's more related to his age and if he's as good as he used to be and whatnot. Which I am on the other side of that fence. I think Lomachenko is awesome. I think he's still a great fighter. And I think this fight really matters. And I think that either way, the winner of this fight is going to be ultimately rightfully recognized as the undisputed lightweight champion of the world. And, you know, Haney, he beat a weak champion, especially an undisputed one. I thought it was, I mean, he beat Kambosos, who beat Lopez on just what I thought was just an off night on Lopez's part. And then, you know, we got all those belts and then Haney beats him. It's kind of like, it's not the best fighting the best. Now this fight is, I think that, Lomachenko, who's been there before, he's been around for a while. This is a true passing of the guard type fight. And I do believe that's going to happen. I got Haney winning this fight.
Yeah,
especially because what you just said, if this is a technical fight, it's all Haney. Lomachenko's shot in this fight is to make it a war. He's got to go after him. He's got to push him. He's got to do things that Haney doesn't want to do. Haney doesn't like to fight those kinds of fights. And Lomachenko can do it. People think of him as just a technical boxer. But when he wants to get inside and do work and put pressure, he did at the end of the Lopez fight. He's going to have to do that from the opening bell. Because if he stays on the outside with Haney, he's going to get picked apart.
He has to get inside. And this fight's going to come down to that. I feel like the X's and O's of this fight is Lomachenko pushing the pace, angles, and getting inside angles as the shorter guy, and it's going to be Haney's jab, which is probably the best jab at the lightweight division right now in terms of activity. Like, he throws it like 25, 30 times, lands it at a 25% clip, which is number one at lightweight. It's his best punch.
The size difference is ridiculous, too, by the
way. Yeah, it's huge. Like, when they met in the ring.
People don't know how differently built these people are. Like, Haney's a huge 35-pounder. He's easily 150, 155 in the ring that night, probably maybe even more. Lomachenko's going to be 141 in the ring. Like, they're going to be completely different sized people on fight night. And I don't think people really understand that, because Lomachenko's not a 35-pounder. He's better served for 130. And Haney isn't really a 35-pounder anymore. He's probably a 40-pounder. So we got guys who are fighting in basically two weight classes apart. And yeah, I've been around both men. I know what their physical sizes are like, and it's, I don't think people at home really understand that.
It's an ESPN Plus pay-per-view. priced at $60, which is relevant because the Tank Ryan Garcia fight just got announced for $84.99. That's pretty steep. $60, only three fights on the pay-per-view portion. That was interesting to me. Usually pay-per-views standard four fights, but they are putting two fights, Juco Nakatani versus Maloney, on regular ESPN leading into the pay-per-view, which UFC does beautifully. They'll have two free fights, and then, you know, they'll maybe show like a little bit of the pay-per-view on ESPN and then go order the pay-per-view now. So it's going to be a really good night of fights all around. But I really like this fight, Haney and Lomachenko, because I love a good storyline. And like you kind of touched on this too, it's like Devin Haney, email champ. I'm not saying these things. These are the things that have been floating around Devin Haney his whole career.
The mutterings on the interwebs.
Yeah, the critics. The email champ, which he couldn't do anything about. He just was in a position any fighter would have taken that belt the same way. He got paid a lot of money for Matchroom, and he did not deliver in terms of like, you know, ticket sales and all that. But he did fight some good opponents, but it was like never the elite of the elite. And then he lucks out and gets a Kambosos fight and beats him twice. I mean, he had to do that. And he left Top Rank. Oh, excuse me. He left Matchroom and he goes to Top Rank and he gets those fights. But there are a lot of questions about Haney. But if Haney can go in and beat a Lomachenko, even Lomachenko at this advanced age and not looking as good as he did in previous fights, especially that Ortiz fight. So you got that's what's going for Haney. Then you look at the other side with Lomachenko, who obviously we're big fans of, and I'm a fan of all fighters, especially guys at the elite level. But there are a faction of fans out there that believe that Lomachenko is overrated. They believe that he was given preferential treatment from Top Rank, ESPN, you know, the Matrix stuff, over the top, and all that. And you know, he isn't as good as everyone makes him out to be. He can certainly, not that he has to, you know, disprove anyone at this point. But it's the same thing like with Canelo and maybe taking on Benavidez. Like, there are a lot of questions about Lomachenko's perennial top 10 pound for pound type of guy. He can go in and take out Haney, who is like 23 or 24 years old, who we're looking at as a young stud. That's another feather in the cap, as you like to say, Chris, for Lomachenko, if he's able to take out Haney in this fight. I love the storylines.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's the thing. Boxing is, what have you done for us lately? And Lomachenko, unfortunately, hasn't been doing a whole lot. You know, his last fight was the Ortiz fight, like you mentioned, which wasn't a great fight. But before that, everyone forgets that he would have fought Kambosos if not for the Ukrainian, you know.
Yeah, that fight was signed, sealed, delivered.
Yeah, that
but
was the
just
fight.
Wasn't delivered.
And he would have, listen, I think, yeah, exactly. And listen, he would have beat him. He would have beat Kambosos. So he would have got those titles. And so it's crazy to me that people just completely write him off because he didn't look good in his last fight and he hasn't been in the ring in a while. But yeah, that's boxing. Because like you just said, he goes and he beats Haney. That all goes away. Well, Lomachenko's back in the top five pound for pound. You know, he's the man again. And, you know, it's possible. I don't think so. I think Haney's going to win the fight. But, you know, my broadcast partner, Paul Imanaji, thinks it could be.
Well, he doesn't. He has a beef with Haney.
He thinks it could be. Yeah, he isn't.
It's like personal.
You can go listen to what he thinks about him.
Personal.
But yeah, he thinks that Lomachenko has a good chance to win that fight.
Yeah, I know that like there were beefing back and forth, Paulie and Haney. I don't know. That's a whole other story for another day. Paulie tends to go down those paths.
Paulie's had a beef with everybody.
Even active fighters, where usually it's like, you know, fighters like yourself and that, or some of these guys that the last generation is usually like looks at the past one and like tries to help them out or speaks glowingly of them, but not Paulie. He's got a beef with Haney, but I like this fight. I'm happy it's happening.
What's the undercard look like? You mentioned that the
there is an undercard. I got to pull it up right now. It's a pretty good one. What the hell is it? You put me on the spot here.
It better be if there's only three fights. Jeez.
No, it's a pretty good undercard. It's all set too.
Speaking about that price tag though. So if you really think about what that reason for is, because I think there's a lot of crossover pull for Garcia and Davis. So they're gonna jack that price up. They can get these kids who are Dynasty Ryan. These people. Who
I get why
Davis.
They're making it 85.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense that they're doing that, and that this one, which is more of a hardcore boxing fan fight, even though Lomachenko was a big crossover guy because his style was so weird.
Everyone knows him.
Yeah, everybody knows him. He's the Matrix. He does things. Like, his highlight reel is insane.
He's been around for a while.
If you want to talk about Lomachenko, go watch his highlight reel. He does things that no one else can do.
The man beat Gary Russell Jr. in what, like his fourth fight?
In like his fourth fight. Yeah. That was the week after I won my title against Ruslan. I remember watching it.
Yeah.
I was down in Clearwater Beach celebrating my belt, and I'm watching that fight. It was the week after.
Yeah, those are good times. That's the HBO days. I mean, that's like HBO, yeah. Like Lomachenko was the HBO, was like, that was his, he was there. I mean, HBO and Lomachenko went hand in hand for a while, and that's definitely helped build him up there. But strong undercard will feature Andrew Maloney facing off with Junto Nakatani for the vacant WBO junior bantamweight title. That's on regular ESPN. The return of Oscar Valdez against Adam Bluenose Lopez. In a junior lightweight rematch.
Think about it. That's a rematch. Yeah, that's a rematch where my boy Bluenose dropped Valdez. Yes. And took the fight on a day's notice, jumped to a weight class. That storyline's cool.
If Valdez wins, he will face Navarrete sometime probably in the fall. And then we got Jeremiah Nakatilla meeting Raymond Muratala at lightweight. So it's a good card. I mean, these are good names. We see like this last week with Caleb Plant and Benavidez, like, let's make these cards like four compelling fights. Let's get that going. Let's make that a trend, because I thoroughly enjoyed the Showtime pay-per-view with Plant and Benavidez, because every fight there meant something, and that's what like kind of the UFC does. And like every fight, if there's a storyline, if there's a path, like we know what's going to happen after the fight, like a path to a bigger fight, like bring me those types of fights on pay-per-view.
Yeah, no, you gotta listen. You gotta do it for the fans. You gotta make them want to tune in. And if you just have a top heavy card, it just sucks because that fight doesn't happen until midnight anyway. So you got people who are like, I'm watching these fights I don't really want to watch in the prime time of watching, and they're like trying to stay up, because I know I am trying to stay up for the main event a lot of the time. It's tough when you're on the East Coast. So you gotta pack these cards, and we're seeing that more and more, which is great. I love this card even as well, because you're going to introduce the fans and people. The Muratai is he's a stud. Yeah.
Junto Nakatani too.
Nakatani and Nakatilla. I mean, that guy's trouble. He's the one who destroyed Burchell. But I think it introduces some of the younger generation, which is really smart on Top Rank's part. But Top Rank's really smart in the way that they build guys and introduce them to the fan base, and this is a great way to do it.
Yeah, next time I have Espinosa on the show, or if I see him in Vegas, I'm going to ask him why they put the main event on so late. You know, not to sound like an old washed guy, but like, come on, like 12:30? Like, what other sport does this? Like, no, baseball doesn't do it. Like, NFL doesn't do it. NBA doesn't.
No, nothing does.
NBA gets NBA finals start at like 9, but that's still like that's the game starting at 9. If the main event of a big fight started at 9, I feel like it would get more views. But I don't know.
I don't think anything should go past midnight. That just doesn't make sense in my mind at all. Nothing should go past midnight. If we would finish up main events by 11:30 p.m.,
it'd be more time for, like, I know I'm thinking like a creator, like more time for me to do like post fight stuff. And like, I feel like some of these afternoon shows in the UK, I'm able to put out content and get the word out there better. Must be strange though for you to get into a ring like you at 11:30 at night.
Like, it's not.
But do you spar, like, do you train during the day? Like, do you ever adjust your sparring to know that I'm going to be fighting at 11 p.m.?
Yeah, we move them later, but like it's like anything. It's like traveling for a fight or traveling for anything. You know, there's a lag, but you just get used to it. Fight week, you sleep so much. You know, like especially the last like 2 days, I sleep like 14 hours the night before a fight.
Really?
So I wake up and
I'd be pacing.
Yeah, I sleep. Oh no, I sleep like a baby the night before. I can't sleep at night after a fight, but I'm sleeping all night during the day. I'm taking naps, take them 2 hour naps in the middle of the afternoon that day. So by the time we fight, I mean, I don't want to sleep. I couldn't sleep. I've been sleeping for the past, you know, out of the past 48 hours, I've slept for like, you know, like 22 of them. So
whereas Deontay Wilder for the rematch with Fury lost weight from the weigh-in to the night of the fight because he said he was pacing back and forth in his hotel room. Nervous
that
energy
didn't work out for him.
No,
it didn't work out for him.
No, that's crazy.
You gotta be relaxed. Yeah. Fighters need to be. You need to be chill. You need to save it for the fight.
One last thing on Devin Haney, and I think this could be another good trend that we can see with fighters. This guy has managed his career beautifully from the start of starting his own promotion company when he was 18 and 19. I mean, not everyone has these resources like a father with the funds and all that. But for him to be, he was independent. Like, I remember watching him fight on Showbox, coming up the ranks, like putting on his own shows where he was on. And then he gets the bag from Matchroom, and he gets a lot of money from Matchroom. But he did take on some good fights with Linares and Jojo Diaz. And then he figures out where I'm at my career. What is the best way for me to make the fights that everyone wants to see, that I want to see for my legacy? He goes to Top Rank. And a lot was made of that, of him, like, signing away his career and taking less money. That's all BS. Like, he made a good amount of money to fight Kambosos. It wasn't anything like a huge pay cut to do that. But he decided to do it. He's the one who put his sign on the dotted line, because he knew he would get a shot at Kambosos, even if he had to go to Australia twice to become undisputed. Now he's fighting Lomachenko, where he's the A-side, in a big pay-per-view for all the belts, which a lot of the guys at 135 would love to be in that position. So I think he has played it perfectly, and I think it's a good example of a fighter not being married to one promoter for 6-7 fights and being more of a free agent while still working with a promotion.
Well, you couldn't say it better. The resources matter. Who you have around you matters. It's been scripted. He's been groomed since he was a child to be this guy. And he has a lot of people around him who are really smart and who know the game. And they're making power moves. They're making various educating moves. They're making a lot of moves behind the scenes. So this would be one of those things, guys, who go, "Oh, I want that's the way to do it." Man, you can't do that. You can't do what this kid did. You don't have the resources of the people around you to do it. Yeah, it's good. This seems like a perfect route, and this would be the idea. This is the archetype of how you're. No way. No, you can't do it. Trust me.
You're talking about like Bill Haney, his dad, who's now his manager and like trainer and like all that. Like, he was bankrolling his career early with like.
Yeah, I met Devin when he was 11 years old in Vegas, and he was coming to watch my sparring. And his father was getting involved with the sport, and he had fighters that he was helping to manage. I barbered a couple of his guys, and Devin was always there. And that was always the plan. This is nothing new. This has been orchestrated, just like Floyd Mayweather was. Floyd Mayweather was orchestrated from birth to be who he was. And, you know, he obviously had the great amateur background, which Haney does as well. Caught the attention of everyone, was in Vegas, which is the hub of all the business side of boxing and on this side of the world. So, yeah, they were very intertwined. You know, so these and a lot of young kids who want to, like, go that route, good luck.
Okay, but let's say you don't have the funding, obviously, and you can't have your dad do that for you. You would sign with like a Top Rank then, right? And then you would get into these long-term
deals.
You'd
be married to that. You would be married there, and you'd be stuck. And then, because you know, they get you early when you have nothing, and most guys don't even have a lawyer to look at their contract the first one they sign. You know, so very very different world. But you know, this is the perfect way to do it, and they've executed perfectly. But at the end of the day, the kid always had to win.
Exactly, number one.
He's always had that. At the end of the day, you have to train hard. You have to be disciplined. You have to stick to the game plan. And I think his mindset, his discipline, and his training has separated him from all the other guys at 135. Yeah.
His mindset is also, like, to be great. Like, he's, like, talking about legacy all the time, and he really means it. Like, he's 23. He's now, like, in one big fight after the next. That's how you do it. Like, this is how you do it. This is how you build a career, and, like, this is the way to do it. Make some big fights in your 20s. And establish yourself while you're still young, and you can make 135 at 23 years old. And I wouldn't say does it comfortably, but he could still make the weight. But yeah, he did still sign with Matchroom, though. You know, he had to align with promoters, but he did it like smartly, and he was.
Yeah, but we don't know these deals, right?
Exactly.
Signing with a promoter for most people is like, oh, you got a 5-year deal. With two years extended, you know, like that's what most of the guys sign. But they're like signing for fights. So they're going to sign with Matchroom. But how many fights did you really sign with? Two.
I think it was a three.
How do we get out of it?
It had to be a three fights. I think Haney was a 3-fight deal, and then
nothing has to be anything. That's the thing about contracts. Like a lot of guys, when you come in, it's like it has to be this. It never has to be anything. You can always negotiate. So it could have been a 2-fight deal. Let me do a plus one, whatever. But that's the behind the scenes stuff that people would never understand or know about.
Yeah, but to see him go, like, no other fighter has really done this, to go from Matchroom to Top Rank at 23 and then jump right into big fights, like, it's unheard of.
Good lawyers. Yeah. Good negotiating. good management from Bill. Bill's the man.
I like Bill Haney.
Good lawyers who make ironclad contracts. It takes, like you said, resources, and I'm just talking about money. I'm talking about access to minds and people and professionals who can help you.
Yeah, love that. Big fight.
A lawyer is your best friend in boxing, dude.
Yeah, it's such a
lawyer. Lawyer is your best friend.
It's litigation, man. You're fighting the opponent. You're fighting the promoter. You need.
Oh, you know how many times I've been sued?
It's crazy, man. It's crazy. It's such a wild west. But Devin Haney is an example of someone that's kind of worked, circumnavigated, and worked himself into a really good position. And he fights Vasily Lomachenko May 20th. We'll have a lot more coverage of that fight in the lead up.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Let's talk Virgil Ortiz quickly before we get to our fight previews. Virgil Ortiz, once again, is out of a fight with Amanis Stanionis. This is the second time this fight has been postponed. It was postponed originally.
I like this fight, too.
I love this fight. Stanionis had his appendix removed. The fight was originally scheduled for March. But it looks like, according to Dan Rayfield's reporting, that Virgil Ortiz is suffering from the same blood – is a disease, correct?
Well, rhabdomyolysis, it's a condition. So,
say it again.
Rhabdomyolysis, a.k.a. rhabdo. My nephew played soccer in college, went through this somewhat recently. And what happens is it's when you train muscles, they break down and releases, red blood cells into your bloodstream and broken down muscle tissue. And when you add that to being dehydrated as well, your blood volume is low. When the ratio of that muscle tissue in your bloodstream and your blood volume being low – What happens is your kidneys shut down because they have trouble filtering that out. No. And it's a mess. Your urine literally looks like coffee. Your body shuts down. You got to go and get intravenous fluids. My nephew is, I think he had 9 liters of fluid put through his body the day that it happened. He spent 3 days in the hospital. It's a very, very serious condition. He's going to be in the hospital for a few days. And there are genetic components that make it more risky for certain people for this to happen. Obviously, this has happened to him twice now. And listen, he's a really big guy. Making 47 might not be in the cards anymore because think about it. I mean, really hard training plus being dehydrated, making weight. That's what that sounds like. It's a tough spot to be in. It makes me think this fight may not happen, and we might have to see Virgil Ortiz move up to 54.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, like, this is a serious ailment, and now he's had trouble making 147 for a while. This is the second time he's had it, and it's very serious, as you just illustrated. So a move to 154 certainly seems imminent because it's just, like, not healthy. I mean, it's dangerous what's really happening with him, and a lot of these guys, we're just talking about Devin Haney, like he's eventually going to move to 140, and it's really hard to cut weight, as you can tell us. But when it comes to this, when you're having, like, you're being hospitalized numerous times, like, there's a serious problem. And I mean, usually I would say, all right, he'll do what he can to get down to 147 because that's where he spent most of his career, and he's waited such a long time and worked his way into a position where he can get a Crawford or a Spence. But your body can't do it. Your body can't do it. Like, you're getting hospitalized. This is really, really serious.
Yeah. And when you're talking about damaging, like, major organs, like your kidneys, it's hard to fix those, man. So you got to be really careful. It's not just life-changing type stuff. This is very serious. It's not, it's not just like, I can't make weight or I got sick. Like, he's got a recurring condition, that's being exacerbated by his training, his lifestyle. So, and by the sport itself.
He's young, and he's
growing. That's another thing. He's young, so, like, making this weight, how much longer can you really do it?
Yeah, it's crazy. We'll see what's going to happen with this. We're going to figure out if they find a new date or if he just straight up goes up to 154 and relinquishes some of his standings at 147. Sucks, because Virgil Ortiz is a good guy, good kid. I think he's really talented.
Oh yeah, I'm a big fan too.
Right, he kids. I mean. 100% knockout percentage. He's a guy that we want to see him fight Boots. You want to see him fight some of the guys at 147. Man, the welterweight division is just like a freaking mess right now. I mean, even the young guys, we can't even depend on the young guys. Like, Boots, so inactive, and no one wants to fight him. And the strangest career development for a bona fide can't-miss prospect that I've seen in a long time. Virgil Ortiz is having these ailments. Then we got Spence and Crawford. Who knows what the hell they're doing at this point? Keith Thurman fights once every 3 years. Jeez. This in the middleweight division? Whew. The two divisions we love for years. They're the backbone of the sport. Are now, like, I say this all the time, a barren wasteland.
And you know what's funny about the welterweight division? We got two guys in the weight class who are in the top five in the pound for pound for most people's pound for pound list. Top five. You got two guys, and they're both undefeated, and they're in the same weight class, and they have all the belts between the two of them.
That's why I don't really
Spence Crawford, obviously, which is insane. We got all these really good guys that we can't make fights of. So, yeah, it becomes a barren wasteland full of great fighters.
Yeah, that's why I don't really subscribe to the pound for pound, because, like, what is it? Like, there's no criteria for it. All right, let's get to.
I hate pound for pounds.
Hate them.
I hate it. I hate it. I know you don't like it either, but I actually just put one together recently, and I'm like, I was forced to.
Yeah, it's like I'm happy.
It's all theoretical nonsense.
Yeah, I'm happy I don't have to, like, no one's forcing me to do them. I always subscribe to the Mount Rushmore. I say, who are the top four or five, like, interchangeable, like, who are the five that you want to see, or and all that. Big fight this weekend, Chris. Anthony Joshua is taking on Jermaine Franklin. You'll be on the call with Todd Grisham. Big fight for Anthony Joshua. Anthony Joshua says if he'll retire if he loses this fight. He says a lot of things in the lead-ups to fights. His psyche is always questioned with Anthony Joshua, just as much as his physical attributes and what happens in the ring. It's like, what's AJ thinking? Where is he at in his career? Because he's such a big star over there. He says, if I lose to Jermaine Franklin, I will retire. Do you believe it?
He should. Where's he going to go from there? What's the point? He's made enough money. You know, he's been world champion. He's beaten some great fighters. He's got an epic win on his resume with the Klitschko bout, which is one of the best heavyweight fights I've seen in recent years. You lose to this guy, it's like, hey, Franklin, hey, he's a good fighter, but he's not, I don't see him as a top dog in the heavyweight division in any era, especially all the studs that we have at the top of the division now. I agree. He just lost to Dillian White.
Yeah, but he did lose to Dillian White. Those that don't know much about Jermaine Franklin is he was an undefeated American fighter that is known as a contact type of fighter. Not a big knockout guy. Never been stopped. Has fast hands.
Very solid.
Very solid. Fast hands, has fast hands. Puts together his combinations. But the main thing with him is, like I said, never been stopped. So if Joshua is able to go in there and take him out, I think that's such a good jolt for his career and his psyche, which we always seem to talk about. But Franklin is a sizable underdog in this fight, and I think if Joshua, I'll ask you this, Chris, does Anthony Joshua need a knockout in this fight to propel his career? Is it good enough for him to win a decision?
Does he need a knockout? Yes, to propel him to us thinking about the Joshua of old. But it doesn't matter. He's Anthony Joshua. A win is a win is a win with a name like that and a guy that is that, you know, he's still a premier guy in the heavyweight division. He moves forward. And he gets by Franklin or he dominates and doesn't hurt him or doesn't stop him, which could very well happen. Franklin is a very, very solid chin, durable guy, like you said. But I think it's just going to change how much people care. You know, a little bit, but I don't know. If he goes out there and he blasts Franklin out, I mean, we're going to be screaming from the roof, me included. No, Joshua's back. And I mean, I like Joshua. I like when he is being the Joshua of old. I like when he's leading the charge in the heavyweight division. I like all the fights that can be made with him. I still want to see him with Wilder. I want to see him with Tyson Fury. I want to see these fights. So I'll be leading the charge if he knocks out Franklin early on. That Joshua's back and let's make those big fights. But if he just gets past them and just beats them, it's going to tarnish the movement forward a little bit.
Yeah, he's always going to be in big fights because he's a draw. And
he's Anthony Joshua.
Even coming off losses, like the loss to Usyk, there were, you know, as much as you believe the negotiations with Fury, but he like went right into discussions with Tyson Fury because he is a name. Anthony Joshua will always be in big fights, but I do believe that he needs to find himself a big knockout. I do believe for his mental whatever and for him to move forward and for the fans to really buy in to a fight with a Wilder, I think he needs to get a knockout. And an interesting aspect of this camp for Joshua is that he spent the entire camp in the U.S. and he spent it with a new trainer in Derek James. Derek James is consensus best trainer in the sport right now. He's got Errol Spence. He's got Jermell Charlo. He's got Frank Martin and a slew of other local fighters in the Texas area. That's going to be a big part of Anthony Joshua moving forward. We've talked about this on our preview episode, which will be out on Friday, is Joshua is now looking for new trainers. It didn't work out with Robert Garcia. Derek James has two fighters in a stable that fight completely different. He's got Errol Spence, who is a 75 around punches thrown guy that will wear you down with attrition. That's not going to be Anthony Joshua. Jermell Charlo is a guy that throws in the 35 to 40 range, which Joshua is around there, but has devastating knockout power. I think if Derek James could get Joshua to find that balance and get back to the old AJ, you know, controlling the fight with his jab, but being more devastating and being a little bit more aggressive with the power shots, then we can see this Joshua 3.0 flourish.
Well, Joshua, he's never been a one-punch guy. He's not Vladimir Klitschko. Vladimir Klitschko could fight a boring fight, just fighting behind the jab, and then start you with one right hand. He's done it to so many guys, top 10 heavyweights over two decades. He's that kind of guy. Joshua's not. Joshua's a super athletic, big, strong. He's got fast hands, too. He's got power. Obviously, he's a big guy. So when he's the kind of guy, he stuns you, and then he jumps on you and gets you out of there with combinations. And I think Derek James can be the guy to pull that out of him because that's the way his fighters fight. And I think being around a guy like Errol Spence is really important for Anthony Joshua. The guy is a top dog. He throws tons of combinations. He trains super hard, legendarily hard from what I've heard. Errol Spence's training camps are like, and I think Joshua getting out of his comfort zone over in the UK and coming here to a new camp and being around a bunch of lions is going to be really important for his psyche, which we all know is an issue, but also just the gym culture. The culture of a gym is really important, and I think people don't really understand that because they just think, oh, trainer fighter, yeah, but there's a bunch of other fighters in there too. There's a culture of competitiveness that matters, that helps elevate everyone's game. That's why you see champions come in pairs and threes and fours, because they all elevate each other because they're all competitive. It's a dog-eat-dog world in a gym. And yeah, you got a bunch of studs in there. Everybody wants to beat everybody and everything. That's just the way fighters think. So I think that competitiveness is something that Joshua may have been missing over in the UK, and he's definitely going to get it in the gym with Derek James and those guys down in Texas.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how he comes out and looks, you know, you know, his punch distribution and all that. The lights went down for a second in here. Mid-sentence, we're good now. Here's Ronnie. Turn the lights back on.
Hey, super producer.
There he is. The lights went out for a second. Hope you'll see if the lights will go out for Jermaine Franklin.
Oh.
Nailed that joke. Good. But with Joshua, what I want to see with Derek James is the punch distribution. You know, Joshua's becoming a jab-first guy. 60% of Joshua's thrown punches are jabs. It used to be switched around. He used to be more of a power punch type of guy. Obviously, the level of competition has rose for him, and you can't afford to just be reckless when you're fighting the Joseph Parkers and Dillian Whites and some of the guys he fought early on in his career. But I want to see them find that balance, and I think that we'll see if Derek James can get that out of him. We'll see if this can be a longer relationship and not like Joshua goes from like one trainer to the next, which we see heavyweights do in the latter stages of their careers.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's big money, so trainers are always willing to jump on, but if they can't really mesh, personalities matter when it comes to trainers. You know, I've had a bunch of trainers throughout my career too. And like I said, gym culture matters. If you're just not, if who knows, maybe you're super uncomfortable in that place, it's not a good fit. You know, he didn't really give Robert Garcia a great opportunity because he brought him over to the UK. He didn't come train with him. I actually thought that Joshua fought very well in the rematch with Usyk. He enacted a lot of the changes that I think Robert Garcia would have been good to do, which is a good sign because I don't really like having one camp with a coach to see how much different the fighter is going to be, because how different are you going to be at this stage of your career with one camp, with just 3 months worth of training? So you're not going to get a fair shake for a trainer like Robert Garcia. But Joshua did listen, and he did a lot of the things that Robert wanted to do. So that's a good sign that Anthony Joshua, the old dog, can still learn new tricks. And I think with a guy like Derek James, it could be a good fit.
Yeah, I think Joshua gets a late stoppage. I think eighth round on. Maybe not a one-punch knockout, but, you know, the ref waves it off. Are you still sticking with your under five?
Yeah, I'm going early.
Interesting.
I think the power is just too much. I think it's going to be one of those things where Joshua sits down more. And, you know, combination punchers have more openings. They get hit more. You know, I was a combination puncher. You get hit sometimes, you know, it's just one of those things. And I think Franklin's going to be there, and it's just different in the heavyweight division. You know, if Joshua's still got that pop, I say he does it early.
Over on ESPN, Robesi Ramirez will be fighting Isaac Dogbe. Like this fight a lot. I think Robesi Ramirez is the most talented featherweight in the world. I think, he's not excellent. Getting, he's one of those guys that was a long time amateur, has an insane amateur career. But
I get a lot of pushback on him, though. I talk about how good he is, and I get pushback.
He doesn't have the devastating power of like Mauricio Lara, like doesn't have like the flashiness of some of the other guys at 126. He also doesn't have like a bigger profile. Like he became a pro like what, 3 or 4 years ago? Like you're going to be hearing about this guy.
Losing his pro debut didn't help.
Losing his pro debut was insane. If you think about his amateur career,
okay, yes, yeah.
That is like I have his amateur stats. It's like I think he won his first 130 amateur fights.
That's insane.
And he loses his he got dropped in the first round of his pro debut. But
listen, taking that headgear off and putting small gloves on.
129 fight winning streak, two-time Olympic gold medalist. The two-time Olympic gold medalist club is very rare. It's like Clarissa Shields and Lomachenko. And he was the last man to defeat pound-for-pound candidate Shakur Stevenson in the amateurs. But you know what? A lot of guys, there were some Hall of Famers that have lost their first fight. You know, Juan Manuel Marquez, Bernard Hopkins. It's a fun list. But I think he's, like, talent-wise, I think he's probably the most talented featherweight. Will he get those shots?
Also, potential-wise, because he's getting so much better all the time.
Right. Let's reset the featherweight division real quick. You got Mauricio Lara, who just took out Lee Wood. I think he's number one right now. And then you got Ray Vargas, who went up to 130, tested the waters there, lost. And he'll probably go back down to 126, but, you know, he's getting up there. Luis Alberto Lopez is the IBF champ. He's fighting Mick Conlon on May 27th.
What's his name? Veneno, right?
Yeah.
El Venom?
Yeah. He just beat Warrington. And then you got Brandon Figueroa.
He's very good. I've called his fights.
Right. You got Brandon Figueroa. You got Mark Marcello. You got Lee Wood. You got George Warrington and Robesi Ramirez, who, I mean, should be at the top of this list. And we'll see with Dogbe, who's tough. You know, Dogbe's really bounced back since those back-to-back losses to Navarrete, where he got beat so badly. I mean, those were like some of those career-defining beatdowns he took to Navarrete, but he's reeled off some pretty good wins. I think he's won five straight since then, four straight.
It's all really tough fights, though.
He's always in a wars, though, man.
Dude, he is a grinder. He gets hit with big shots. He throws bombs. He's a lot of fun to watch. I actually really like Dogbe. I like watching his fights. I like him better now than actually before. You know, he's always in there, and he's a good litmus test kind of guy at this point. I think that this is it's a huge step up for Robesi. You know, that supernova knockout that he had was insane. Beautiful one punch, straight down the middle, 3-2, boom. I mean, a textbook stuff, and scores a beautiful knockout. He said the guy's not a one punch guy. I was like, well, I mean, you're not going to get a much better one punch, you know, knockout than that. And but Dogbe, I mean, if he can stop Dogbe, that would be a massive statement. But I think, you know, there's going to be opportunities for Dogbe to pressure him and use his physicality, because he's a super physical guy. He's physically strong. He makes it ugly at times. But I mean, I think Robesi is really special, and I think he's gonna really shine.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the lines for this fight over on DraftKings.
That'd be interesting to hear.
Dogbe is +475 underdog. The under 10.5 is +105. I think Ramirez is going to stop him. It's just a matter of when. Let's see, winning method. Ramirez by KO. Oh my God, it's plus 100, plus money. I'd probably take that. I think Roberto Ramirez is going to stop him late. So
I do too. I think he's going to piece him up, take him apart.
So you can get that. I mean, if you take the under. The under is plus 105, but the under and Robesi by KO is pretty much the same odds. So it's pretty much what you think. Like, I think he's going to knock him out under 10.5. So I would probably go with the Robesi by KO, and you should take my betting advice because I'm on a heater.
You're on a heater right now.
I am. Moving. I'm moving, baby. Let's go. That's the episode this week. So a lot to look forward to this weekend. Two good main events. One in the afternoon, one at night. Chris on the call. Are you preparing for your big call of Anthony Joshua, Jermaine Franklin?
So I've called. This is my second Joshua fight calling in a row. I called his rematch with Usyk. So you also know that I think everyone listening knows I'm a big Anthony Joshua fan. So I watch I've watched all of his fights, but I gotta sharpen up a little bit on Franklin. Watch some of his older fights. And kind of look for those tells, because I don't know if everybody at home, there's a lot of work when it comes to calling fights. I watch a ton of tape on everybody. I take notes. I'm all about those little tells, those little things. So when it comes to it, technique wise, I can guide you all in the right direction. And that's also, you know, how we do it here with all our predictions and whatnot. So
yeah,
a lot of work.
Love it. Big fight this weekend. Hope everyone enjoyed the show. As always, remember, keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times, and I suggest you stay out of those DMs.